Yeah, thank you for coming. Thank you for the invitation.
So, yeah, if I have some smooth projective surface S over the complex numbers, I can produce from this surface a family of varieties called Hilbert schemes of points on S, and I'll denote it S upper brackets N, and this parameterizes zero-dimensional subscheme Z of S of length N. And this is, again, smooth, projective. If I'm allowed to make my S quasi-projective, and then the resulting Hilbert scheme will be quasi-projective, and will be of twice N dimensions. That's weird. I want to say dimension two. Okay. And if I have bundles on my surface, these will induce, using the universal family as a correspondence, bundles on my Hilbert scheme. So in particular, if I have some line bundle S, or line bundle L on S, this gives rise to a rank N bundle, L upper brackets N, on my Hilbert scheme. And there's a few ways to define this. Maybe for our purposes, the easiest way is just to say what the fiber is over some point of the Hilbert scheme. The fiber of the tautological bundle is just sections of my subscheme twisted by this line bundle question. And so these bundles and their characteristic classes appear in many different contexts. They appear in enumerative geometry. They count some very classical items, like they count chords to embeddings of surfaces given by linear systems. They show up in more complicated geometric situations. So they show up in the computation of certain Donaldson invariants. And they also show up in physics as they contribute fundamental matter to gauge theoretic partition functions. And their characteristic classes have been the focus of recent work. For example, the computation of this top Segre class, well, this was the subject of a conjecture of Lane from the 90s, and it was recently proved in some formula for this number was proved by Lane work of Alina Marion, Drago Chaprea, and Rahul Pantari Panda, and Claire Voisin. And the kind of higher rank analogs of the situation are still being studied. Okay. And so there's some kind of general approach to these sorts of expressions due to Alingsrud, Gercha, and Len. And so what does that approach tell me? It says if given a series composed of numbers that look like this. And so I can take the top Segre class as an example, or more generally, a more complicated expression built out of multiplicative characteristic classes. So I can throw in some, this is some multiplicative characteristic class. So I could take the total churn class, the total segre class, the total churn class times the total segre class. And I can also do the same with the tangent bundle. And the result of Ellingsford, Grotius, and Lin says that such series, or such integrals, are governed by universal series. Right, that is, there exists series, let's call them A sub phi and B sub phi and so on, that depend on Q. But in particular, they do not depend on the service and bundle in question. Such that this series, let me call it star so I don't have to write the whole thing again, such that star is equal to some product of these series weighted by the churn numbers associated to this pair of service and line bundle. And so what are the possible churn numbers that can show up? I can have the second churn class of the service. I can take the first churn class of the surface squared. I can take the first churn class of the surface and multiply it by the first churn class of the line bundle. Or I could have the first churn class of the line bundle squared. And so all the geometric data of the surface line bundle only enter through these numbers here. And for each such characteristic class I can pick, I'll get potentially different series A, B, C, and D. And so one conclusion of this.
Sorry, can I ask, you've got, in star, you've got a phi 1 and phi 2, but on the right-hand side of there, you just have a phi.
Yeah, so you can think of phi as some kind of pair, phi 1, phi 2. The point of this notation is just to emphasize that the answer will depend on the form of the integrand you stick in, but won't depend on the surface and line one.
And so if phi 2, if there's no phi 2, if it's just a phi 1, is there anything I can say about what the...
Nothing any more special.
Okay.
Yeah.
If it was a vector bundle instead of a line bundle.
Still okay. Yeah. Yeah, and you probably can throw in multiple vector bundles also, and you just have to be, you get more series. So these universal series show up in all kinds of different places. So people are trying to study things like moduli of rank 2 sheaves over certain surfaces, and then you get maybe 7 universal series that you want to say something about. So this is a pretty, this kind of universality technique is pretty pliable. For our purposes today, this will be enough. And so, to determine the value of this series, we just need to know its values for enough pairs, S and L, to pin down the values of these universal series. And so the value of S and L, so in particular, I can take toric surfaces and line bundles on them. And that will give me certainly enough different quadruples of these churn numbers to pin down what the series are. I'm sorry, what's the question?
No,
are there going to be modular?
Yeah, modular.
Sometimes, yeah.
We'll give you the order.
characteristic.
Right. Or if you look at the elliptic genus. But in general, probably, I don't see why.
I think it depends on phi.
Yeah, right. And so, okay, if I have, so now I've reduced to toric S. And then when my S is toric, I have another tool to compute things that look like this. In particular, I have equivariant localization. So then I can use equivariant localization to further reduce this problem. All right, so let's say I have some two-dimensional torus. I'll call it T naught acting on S. Then if I look at the fixed points of the Hilbert scheme on this toric surface, this locally near any fixed point, I have some toric neighborhood that looks like C2. And so the fixed points of this toric surface look like products of fixed points of the Hilbert scheme with the standard action of a two-dimensional torus. And things like tangent bundle and tautological bundles also behave nicely with respect to this kind of decomposition. And so the point is to understand this kind of expression for toric S, I can then, so it suffices to compute such series when, so to compute maybe an equivariant version of star of these kind of series when S is C2, and if I have a line bundle, there's not too many choices. It has to be the trivial bundle twisted by some torus character. Okay. And so then we can apply equivariant localization again to this particular situation. So I should mention already kind of here, we diverge from the methods that these authors used to study this.
Does that mean that this gives you like an independent proof of their result?
So we're not going to end up retrieving this result, but some kind of k-theoretic variant thereof. Yeah, so it is possible that these methods could reproduce this somehow, but I don't see how yet. Maybe you can get some of these series, but not all four. And so yeah, for example, and this is really two different works. The first was just for K3, and so you can determine two of these series, and then you have to do a little more work to get the other two series. But this will be a kind of different approach. What I want to do is apply equivariant localization again. So to this case of C2. And then we can write everything in terms of combinatorics. All right, so if I take the torus fixed points of the Hilbert scheme of n points, these fixed points correspond to monomial ideals in the polynomial ring in two variables of colink n. And these correspond to Young diagrams of size n. And all of this data, these churn roots, can be written in terms of these partitions as well. So if I look at the tangent space, at the subscheme given by some lambda, well, its character can be written in terms of the arms and leg lengths of squares of this partition. So I have some box in my partition, and the character and here, these T1 and T2 are just the weights of my torus. And so as a T representation, this is how the tangent space to one of these fixed points decomposes. And the tautological bundle is even easier. If I have the fiber of this tautological bundle at some fixed point is just the sum over boxes of the content, maybe 1 over the content of the boxes times this torus weight u. And so let me remind you what these numbers are. The arm length is just the number of squares I have to go from a given box to get to the eastern edge of my Young diagram. And the co-length, or the content in one direction, is just the opposite, how far I have to go to get to the west. And similarly for the content. OK. And so using this, we can write the series star purely in terms of combinatorics. So, for example, suppose I wanted to look at some kind of k-theoretic version of this, which is allowed because Grundig-Riemann-Rock lets me write an Euler characteristic as some integral involving a churn class of the tangent bundle. And so I can look at, say, the sum over an Euler characteristic of the Hilbert scheme, and I want to take some power of some exterior power of a tautological bundle, and maybe tensor it with a symmetric power of a tautological bundle. And I want variables to keep track of the number of points of the Hilbert scheme, the degree of the exterior power I take, and the degree of the symmetric power I take. And so this is a sum over all ij n greater than or equal to 0. And equivariant localization lets me understand this as a single sum over partitions. And so I have to, in K-theoretic localization, I have to take the symmetric, the total symmetric power of the normal bundle at any fixed point. And here, that'll be a product over all weights appearing in this character here. Of 1 minus W inverse. And then I need to incorporate this bundle. And so what does that contribute? That contributes to each, let's say, weight, call it V, appearing in this restriction. I have 1 minus MV over 1 minus YV, something like this. And so each of these expressions is something combinatorial. This is some product over boxes. And again, this is some product over boxes in my diagram lambda. And so I have some kind of nasty combinatorial expression for these. And so the point is that, I guess in general, for if you just give me some arbitrary type of characteristic class capital phi, there's not much that can be said. Like, this could be very intractable. But for particular choices of phi, some nice structure emerges. Okay, and so here's the particular phi I want. It's going to look not dissimilar from this one. This Euler characteristic I have on the top right. And so I'll set and we'll have similar kinds of variables before, some kind of variable keeping track of the number of points, some variable keeping track of exterior powers, I'll have two of those, and some variable keeping track of symmetric powers. And then it will depend also on the equivariant parameters of the torus, which I'll suppress from the notation. And so, it will be a sum, again, over now 4 indices. And so I'll take an exterior power of, I want to start with a dual topological bundle. That's more important. I'll take an exterior power of the topological bundle. I'll take a symmetric power of the topological bundle. and it'll be convenient to include this normalization by the determinant of the topological bundle. And then I'll introduce variables to keep track of all these powers I've taken. And so the most concise normalization is the following. Oh, no, I know. So at the end of the day, I get some big expression like this. But the point is this kind of encodes various exterior and symmetric powers of these tautological bundles. And once I know this for O, I can use these variables to get back these equivariant twists I was considering earlier. So kind of this, knowing, understanding this will be enough to compute these kinds of expressions if I replace C2 by S and then O by some arbitrary line bundle L.
Can you give us a hint about why these were the right variables to use? M2y.
Yeah, so it will, maybe once I explain where this comes from, I can answer that a bit better. It still won't be that extremely illuminating, but will be more illuminating than what I can say now.
And you're going to say something also about the determinant factor?
It's the same kind of answer. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And so I've set this, and maybe yeah. I'll leave it here for now. Okay. And so okay, the result is that after with these particular normalizations, this huge series. Before I state the series, let me just say by equivariant localization how this looks. Again, it's some sum over partitions. Q to the number of boxes. Over my tangent weight of one minus, sorry, over one minus one over my tangent weight. And then a product over the contents of these boxes of lambda. And then this determinant normalization means I write things in this way. So again, it's something combinatorial. Yeah.
Two questions actually. Does this particular example have any modular properties?
If it does, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does the platistic logarithm look really nice?
Yeah, so that will show up in a second. The platistic log will show up in a second. So the platistic log of this is not particularly nice, but if I set y equal to 0, then it's very nice.
The y equal to 0 just drops the exterior powers.
Drops the symmetric powers. Yes. So I just take the exterior power.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you'll see that again in 2 minutes. And it's good that that's nice, because the statement is that after you normalize it by that contribution, by killing all the symmetric powers, then this series has some kind of surprising symmetries, or symmetries that are, at least to me, surprising. So if I take my series, and I normalize it by the series I get after removing all symmetric powers, then the result will have two different symmetries. So the first is in these variables m1 and m2 that keep track of the degree of my exterior power, these kind of churn variables. And moreover, There's also a symmetry if I switch the variable keeping track of the number of points and the variable keeping track of the degree of the symmetric power I take. So I have two, this kind of expression has two different symmetries going on. And so, yeah, some comments about this theorem are in order. And the first was what Kevin was asking about. These denominators may look esoteric, but they shouldn't be scary. It turns out these denominators are just the plethysmic exponential of whatever's going on the Hilbert scheme of one point, just on C2. So if I'm being very explicit, this is just the exponential exponential of whatever's going on at one. And so, in other words, these denominators can be kind of completely characterized and understood. The numerators are a bit more wild. So this is, if this, maybe I need a minus sign. Okay. And so then I should say how one can actually, don't want to erase it. I should say how one can actually use this theorem.
So M2
doesn't appear in this because M2 enters with Y here. And so if I kill Y, I kill M2. If the most general version of this, I can also throw in an M3, that another dual power of the tautological bundle. And then I get something that looks more symmetric. And then I get 1 minus M2 here as well. So how would one go about using this? So here's a sample application. Suppose I wanted to understand this series. I'll forget about these exterior powers for now. And suppose I just want to look at the second symmetric power of some line bundle. But I wanted to do this for an arbitrary number of points. And so by equivariant localization, I'd want to understand the terms of y degree at most 2 of the following series. I take some sum over this, over partitions. I have the same kind of tangent term as before. And then I have some product over boxes. And every time I have some y in the denominator. So in particular, so y is in the denominator here. And so every box lambda, every partition lambda could contribute terms of y degree. Up to 2. So to understand this, I have to kind of look at every term of this series. OK. But what does the theorem let me do? Theorem lets me rewrite this sum as some prefactor times the same kind of expression. So this prefactor just comes from these plethysmic terms, which I can understand completely. And then I just take this same series and replace switch q and y. Right, so now I have the sum over lambda of y to the lambda over some product that looks like this. And so now if I need to understand the terms of y degree up to 2, that's much easier. I only have to work with partitions of size at most 2. And so in this way, one can show the following, that for an arbitrary surface S, or arbitrary projective surface S, the Euler characteristic of the second symmetric power of its tautological bundle is some binomial coefficients incorporating the Euler characteristic, the holomorphic Euler characteristic of my surface, and the churn data of my line bundle. So this is a sample kind of calculation one can do using this theorem. For arbitrary n and k, these symmetric powers seem to have no concise expression. Right, so if I increase the degree of the symmetric power, this answer on the right-hand side gets more and more complicated. But there are some special situations where you can say something. So for example, if the holomorphic Euler characteristic of my surface happens to be 1, and the number of points happens to be at least as large as the symmetric power, the degree of the symmetric power I'm taking, then I do have a nice answer. These Euler characteristics stabilize even as you increase the number of points. So you get some nice binomial coefficients. Okay. Are there any questions about this statement or how you might use it to compute particular invariants? Or any other questions? Okay. Okay. So now I'll explain where these kinds of statements come from and start to answer Ben's question about why these particular normalizations. Okay, so what's the strategy to prove this? Here's an outline of where we're going. So these kinds of expressions, Euler characteristics, are integrals over Hilbert schemes of points, or more generally, instanton moduli spaces of frame sheaves. These fall under this general, so F or integrals over the Hilbert scheme, or integrals over instanton moduli space. These fall under this more general umbrella of Nekrasov functions, or Nekrasov partition functions. And these are partition functions of particular supersymmetric gauge theories. And then from physics, there's this philosophy of geometric engineering, which tells me that if I'm interested in some k-theoretic Nekrasov partition function, I can realize that as what's known as a refined topological string partition function. And these are computed by some kind of tensor called the refined topological vertex. So whatever this is, for our purposes, we will see this as a certain limit of what's called a k-theoretic Donaldson-Thomas partition function. So some kind of equivariant Euler characteristic over the Hilbert scheme of curves in a threefold. So this will be some, we'll take some limit. And when we take this limit, we'll make some choice. And so we make some choice, and we kind of get over here, and we get some kind of integral. And for abstract reasons, the answer we get at the end should, or the even the answer we get after we take this limit, should be independent of certain choices of limit. So there should be some kind of wall and chamber structure on the space of limits. And so long as we stay in the same chamber, we should get the same answer over on the left-hand side. And so for two particular limits, we'll start with the k-theoretic DT partition function, and we'll get expressions on two different sides of this equality. So that's the general picture, but I'll detail these steps now. And so, yeah, I should say what we're taking the k-theoretic DT partition function of. So there'll be a certain Torek-Calabi-Yau threefolds. And so when you run this game for a particular Torek-Calabi-Yau threefold, this is the kind of normalization that pops out. And so this will be, this procedure works to produce classes of identities that look like this, but the precise normalizations that show up after you run this procedure are just kind of given to you by the computation. There's no, I mean, even looking at this symmetry, it's kind of striking to have some symmetry between a variable that keeps track of boxes and a variable that keeps track of the degree of the symmetric power, but I don't know of a good geometric reason for this other than it's what emerges from this computation. So if someone knows of some potential geometric or physical explanation, that would be super interesting. But let me explain what this procedure is. So the first thing I should tell you is what a K-theoretic DT partition function is. And so I'll start with my toric Calabi free fold. I'll call it X. And I'll let T be the three-dimensional torus acting on X. And its ring of characters will be generated by T1, T2, T3. And I'll say the weight of the Calabi-Yau form is T1, T2, T3. Okay. And so the K-theoretic DT partition function will be an Euler characteristic over a certain moduli space. It'll be what's called DT moduli space, which is just the Hilbert scheme of projective curves in X. And so this we can write as some union of components that index the curve class and Euler characteristic of the corresponding curves. So I guess the dimension of Y is supposed to be at most 1. And the class of the subscheme Y is beta. And the holomorphic Euler characteristic of the structure sheaf of Y is that. And so unlike Hilbert schemes of points on surfaces, these are not smooth. They're very far from smooth. They're in general of unknown dimension. But the good news is they possess a symmetric perfect obstruction theory. These spaces, each of these components carries a perfect obstruction theory. And for our purposes, it'll suffice to know that the virtual tangent space to some curve Y is given by chi of OY plus chi of Y OX minus chi of Y OY. And so and maybe it's convenient to write this as deformations minus obstructions. And this obstruction theory is also symmetric. And so the symmetry tells us that these deformation and obstruction spaces are related. One is the dual of the other up to tensoring by this weight of the Calabi-Yau form. How long do I have until?
I mean, in principle, another half hour or something if you want.
Okay. Maybe
about an hour, but
yeah. Oh, it's about an hour. Okay. So, I'm a little behind. All right. Maybe I'll stop
Don't worry too much.
What?
We started a bit like 5 minutes late.
Okay. So maybe at 3:05 I'll let whoever wants to leave or something, and if people are still interested, can keep going. Okay. Anyhow. So there's going to be kind of one more ingredient that's needed in the definition of these k-theoretic DT invariants, and that'll come from the virtual canonical bundle. So this is just det ops over det determinant of the deformation space. And the ingredient that's needed will be a square root of this virtual canonical bundle. And so Nekrasov and Akunkov showed that this bundle admits an equivariant square root k root of the 1/2 in the Picard group. After passing to a double cover. Ft. So to take the square root, I may need to take a square root of this character. But other than that, I can produce the square root. And so the k-theoretic Nekrasov partition function, which I'll call zdt of x, is then some weighted sum over the Euler characteristics of the virtual structure sheaves of the Hilbert scheme of curves. But I want a tensor by the square root of this virtual canonical. And so we'll see why this square root of the virtual canonical bundle is convenient to have around. Let's try to compute such a thing. And so again, these can be understood via equivariant localization. And so if I have some torus fix subscheme Y, I can write the character of the virtual tangent space at Y as some sum of deformation weights minus obstruction weights, and this symmetry here tells me that I can arrange these weights so that they come in pairs, multiplying to the weight of this Calabi-Yau form. And so when I write out a localization expression for this, this tensoring by the root of the virtual canonical bundle has the effect of symmetrizing the expression. In other words, what I get for the partition function is some sum over torus fixed subschemes. And I have some variable that records the holomorphic Euler characteristic and the curve class. And then I get some product over these indices I that looks as follows. I get this very nice symmetric expression. Okay, and so in the interest of time, maybe I'll omit describing all the details of this localization calculation, but I'll just kind of briefly explain how these look. So the torus fixed subschemes of curves correspond to configurations of 3D partitions along the one skeleton of the torque club, yeah, threefold. So here's the one skeleton of local P1 cross P1. And how does such a configuration look? Well, the first thing I want to do is assign some 2D partition to each edge. Young diagram to each edge. And then, that's the kind of first step. And once I've done that, I want to assign a 3D partition to each vertex. To each vertex whose asymptotics match the choices I made in the first step. And so in particular, if I have an unbounded edge, I should assign the empty partition to that edge. With any bounded edge, I can assign any 2D partition I want. And again, there from such a configuration, there's some combinatorial method, albeit much more complicated than the one we were looking at for C2, to write these DT partition functions. And so the point is that this DT partition function can be broken up into contributions coming from the edges, these kind of choices we've made in the first step. And then once we've made those choices, we can incorporate all the rest of these 3D partitions at a given edge into some gadget called the vertex. And so this is kind of where the complexity lies. Complexity lies here. And so these vertices are functions of the 2D partitions along the edges meeting that vertex. Okay. And Okay, and like two, yeah, so how do I summarize in 2 minutes? Okay. So in general, this vertex is a complicated function. Of Q, this variable that kept track of the Euler characteristic, or in this picture, the kind of number of boxes, some normalized number of boxes, and these equivariant parameters, where I have to incorporate the square root of the weight of the Clausius form. However, the symmetry of this expression between the numerator and the denominator of the expression asterisk implies that under one parameter subgroups, landing in the subtorus that fixes the Calabi-Yau form, the expression so let's say the limit as z goes to infinity of this expression evaluated under this one parameter subgroup is a function just of Q and the square root of the weight of this form. In other words, these variables don't enter individually, they only enter through the product. And then for very particular choices of sigma, so for sigma that to be unrigorous, come close to preserving a coordinate direction at a given vertex, This limit, which I'll call, let's see, with an upper index sigma, can be written combinatorially in terms of Schewscher and MacDonald polynomials. And this expression is very closely related to what's called the refined topological vertex. And the choice of this limit is very closely related to what's called a choice of preferred direction for the refined topological vertex, if that means anything. And so then there's a proposition that says the behavior of the limit of the whole DT partition function under some one parameter subgroup sigma will depend on the geometry of curves in X. More specifically, if a curve can, very roughly, if a curve can escape to infinity along some directions Wi, and two one parameter subgroups sigma 1 and sigma 2 have the same attracting and repelling behavior, in each of these non-compact directions of the geometry, then the two resulting limits are equal. And so applying this to a particular torque, you can pick any kind of toric Calabi-Yau threefold such that there are two different sets of parallel edges that cover all the vertices, and this should produce interesting identities. And so if we apply it to this particular geometry, which I guess engineers SU2 gauge theory with four fundamental matter or something like that, then taking a certain specialization, one recovers the original theorem. So the two sets of parallel edges that cover all the vertices here are this one and all the vertical edges. And so I should mention that you really do need the full strength of this. There are curves in this geometry, kind of this curve here can escape to infinity in this direction. And so there are multiple choices of limit that correspond to the same preferred direction, and you have to be careful about which of these limits you take. So we recover the identity from earlier. Okay, yeah, I'll stop there. I apologize, the ending was a bit rushed, but feel free to ask me to expand upon anything. Thanks for your attention.
Why, if this engineer is SU2 gauge theory, why were you discussing U1 gauge theory?
So somehow, if we want all these kind of accoutrements we had in the theorem I wrote down earlier, you want to specialize this variable here. And so this is what some kind of integral over M2, which is the fixed points are two partitions, lambda and mu. And so if I pick this judiciously, this variable interesting this fundamental matter, I can kind of kill the partition. I can kill the partition that was living along this edge, and moreover force these legs to be empty. And so what that essentially does is forces this mu to be empty, and then I recover M1, which is my Hilbert scheme. And so this M2Y of Ben kind of shows up here as like one of these curves. Yeah, so if I just, if I want to get, say, this proposition that rewrote this denominator as the logistic exponential, then I just need to look at this fellow, which looks more like a computation over M1 to begin with. But just like in geometric representation theory, when sometimes you want to show something about the Hilbert scheme, it's easier to think of it as a piece of M2. The same kind of picture is up here.
Maybe you've just answered this question and I didn't understand the answer, but
okay.
Can you just say a few words about how these K-theoretic Donaldson-Thomas invariants recovered for you integrals over the instanton moduli space?
Yeah, it's really just some matching of the combinatorial formulas.
Were you
going
to say M-theory?
Okay, you could say M-theory, yeah, maybe. Maybe Kevin has some better answer for this than
but you're maybe. Saying that somehow that you ended up with a sum over 2D partitions somewhere.
Yeah, so in this, what's the best way to explain this? So in this expression, so let me say a little more about this expression. If here's some kind of C3, and I've already imposed what the incoming edge profiles have to be. I have lambda, mu, and nu. And suppose I've chosen my sigma so that the coordinate direction that's nearly preserved is this vertical one. So in this picture, that corresponds to these little green lines I've drawn. And so the resulting expression on the level of combinatorics is one over boxes in my new of so I'll maybe use tildes to distinguish these are equivariant parameters of a two-dimensional torus, and they're related to my earlier one, a sum combination of this box counting variable and the square root of the weight of this Clavier form. And if you kind of compute this, what one obtains is there's some kind of prefactors, this kind of specialization of a McDonald polynomial that produces half of this denominator of the that shows up. These are kind of half of my tangent ways to the Hilbert scheme. And then I have some sum over skew-Schur polynomials. And the point is that if this vertex meets its kind of counterpart up here, that counterpart is going to provide the other half of these weights. And then when I do these manipulations with skew-Schur polynomials, I can get out the tautological weights, I can get out adjoint matter, I can get out the kind of other accoutrements that were showing up in this big vector bundle I was taking over the Hilbert scheme. And so, yeah, physicists have a more kind of conceptual explanation as to why I'd expect this, but just on the level of combinatorics, geometric engineering is the observation that these two partition functions happen to coincide. So there's a, if I look at some toric skeleton like this, there's some kind of, if I impose certain boundary conditions, there's a recipe in terms of there's a kind of a recipe to tell me what the resulting partition function should be in terms of these. And that's written in terms of the Hilbert scheme as well. Cool. Yeah, sure. Yeah, thanks so much.